Kidzen Hot Yoga of Bellevue is a brand new hot yoga studio in Bellevue, Washington. Come join a beautiful yoga community and become part of something greater than yourself. Hot yoga has so many tremendous benefits, which include allowing your muscles to stretch deeper than they would at room temperature, while detoxifying your body and working out on a micro and macro level. If you have aches and pains or are just searching for an active and meditative workout, hot yoga is for you. Temperatures range from 98 to 105 degrees and postures focus on strength, endurance, and balance, while simultaneously working your organs, nervous system, and glands. This is a comprehensive workout, and more importantly, it's an opportunity to go deeper within yourself and heal your mind and body from the inside out. More info at GetZenYoga.com. That's GetZenYoga.com.
Hi, this is Adam Seward.
And I'm Rick Seward.
And together we have partnered to bring you Awakened Life as part of our commitment to supporting the unfolding of human and planetary consciousness. That's also why we decided to create the Awakening Foundation. Well, what's the Awakening Foundation? The Awakening Foundation is a nonprofit organization that's designed to help facilitate the evolution of consciousness through the creation and distribution of what we're calling Awakened Media. We'd love to connect with you. For more information on the Awakening Foundation, go to adamseward.com. If you'd like to find out more or to talk with us about how you can support the mission, fill out the contact form and we'll get back to you right away. Thanks for listening to Awaken Life. We look forward to connecting.
Are you overwhelmed by your financial situation, behind on your mortgage, buried in credit card debt? You're not alone. Things have changed in this new economy. The new rich are the new smart, and the lawyers at Debt Relief Northwest can help you avoid bankruptcy and get you back on your feet. Don't lose your home or your retirement assets. Call Debt Relief Northwest today for a complimentary phone consultation at 360-876-6425. That's 360-876-6425. Join the new smart and the new rich today.
Hello, world. A deep bow and a warm welcome to another installment of Awaken Life Talk Radio. We're coming to you live worldwide, unless you're listening to a download from our archive at adamseward.com. And just a reminder that if you want to catch this show at a later time, or if you want to catch any of our broadcasts, you can always go to adamseward.com and just register there, and you'll have full access to all of our content, as well as access to our live shows every Monday at 3. So we have a very special guest today, someone that I've really been looking forward to talking to, and I'm not going to really waste any time in introducing you to him. I haven't actually had the opportunity to sit with this guest in person, but Paul is here, and he has had the opportunity, and so Paul will be able to even give us a more intimate perspective on the work and the teachings of this person. But when I think of this particular teacher, this is what comes to mind. No, you're not having any technical difficulties. Silence is the profound transmission. Silence and self-realization are really the gifts that this teacher offers the world. There's a deep abiding in the self that he offers us. And just to tell you, to give you a little more background about our guest, he's the teacher. He's a highly sought after teacher. He comes from a very profound lineage. Ramana Maharshi, and if you don't know who that is, look him up now. He's one of the most revered sages of the 20th century. Papaji, who was his main teacher, and he's the author of a number of books: Sudden Awakening, From Fixation to Freedom, But he's just doing such great work in the field, and I can't prolong the introduction any longer. Eli, thanks so much for coming on the show today.
Well, that's so sweet. Thank you so much. I'm so grateful to be here.
Well, we're very grateful to be with you, and we're very excited to talk about the self today, if that's a topic that interests you at all.
Well, it's up to you. We'll see what you say.
Right. Well, I mean, self-realization, teaching about the self. I mean, that's not you don't happen to teach about that very often, do you? Or
you can't teach anybody how to wake up. You can't teach the truth. All you can do is realize it. And so the best that a teacher can do is point you where you haven't looked before. And so then it's your own investigation. Nobody will teach you to wake up. Nobody can teach you to be enlightened. But you can be pointed to look where you haven't looked before.
Yeah.
To look away from everything that you believe is real.
Sure. Everything. Yeah, the show Awaken Life, the title is Awaken Life. And when we talk about awakening, you know, we refer very specifically to that, I think, awakening you're speaking of, which is the awakening to the self. And the self is, you know, of course, that thing that, you know, you can only point to. And you are so, you know, just in my experience with you, you're just so gifted at pointing to that. And so, you know, we're honored to have you here today to point to that for us, you know.
Thank you so much. You know, it's so beautiful. It's such a rare gift, this time we live in. It's like, I don't know if you've ever been up on a mountaintop waiting for the dawn or by the sea or someplace. You're up all night, maybe by a campfire or not, and you're waiting for the dawn to come, and there's this moment. The dawn isn't yet here, but there's this first light, and this first light is the hearkening of the dawn. It's the letting you know dawn's on the way.
Mm.
And I feel like that's where our world is today. That's where our culture is. That's where it's so mind-blowing, because when I was growing up as a kid in the 50s and early 60s, no one ever spoke of the self. No one had ever heard of the self. No one was doing yoga. There were no teachers. There were no teachings. There was no meditation. There was no discussion. There was no book. There was nothing at all pointing in this direction in this country. And now, you know, yoga studios on every corner, and everyone is speaking of Buddha nature. And actually, it went mainstream when Eckhart went on Oprah, and millions of people were suddenly open to a true wisdom teaching.
Right. Now, I remember I was I did a phone call that night. I called in and asked them both a question, and it was that energy of millions of people around the globe connecting. I mean, it was unlike anything I'd ever felt up to that point.
Yes. Yes.
And, you know, certainly, you know, sometimes we talk about people being, some people are earlier than others. You know, we're all kind of going, but some are earlier. And one of the earliest beings I've ever even heard of in my lifetime, and I studied his work intensely in college, was Ramana Maharshi.
That's right. Ramana Maharshi is the enlightened sage of our age. There's no one alive in our time that was any deeper or more profound. And it's his transmission that actually is what's lighting up the world. His transmission of silence has entered so many hearts and continues to be passed on from heart to heart and mind to mind. And people are waking up into the truth. And it's really through the grace of these, through Ramana's grace, that this has happened.
I've heard people say that sitting with him was like, you know, he was like a white spot in a white space. He was like the whitest spot in a white space. And of course, he was the teacher of Papaji, who was your primary teacher. Is that correct?
Right. Yeah, Papaji is my beloved.
Oh, yeah. It's Yes, the depth of silence that he, I mean, for Ramana, it was, who am I? And for Papaji, was it also, what was it for Papaji? What was it? I mean, of course, it was, who am I? But
there's no slogans for anyone. It's really the emanation of being. Hmm. And the silence that emanates from Ramana, you know, that caught fire in Papaji. And the difference is that Ramana, besides being fully awakened, is also a great saint. He was a saint. He lived the without family, without money, without possessions. He lived basically naked on a couch for anyone to see. One of the rarest embodiments of any kind of human. But what Papaji did was he took this holy transmission, and Papaji was a householder. Papaji was not a saint. Papaji had a wife and children and a job, and Papaji lived in the world, still in the same realization. Right. And Papaji made it available in the middle of the marketplace.
Right.
Papaji's the one that there's now satsang everywhere around the world. There wasn't before Papaji that I was aware of. I mean, you know, maybe you'd find satsang once on a continent, maybe.
Yes.
Not likely. And so Papaji took this brilliant transmission of silence from Ramana and set the world on fire.
Yeah, roared like a lion.
Yes, roared like a lion.
Which is also the title of Papaji's book. What is it? Wake Up and Roar. Is that right?
Wake Up and Roar is the book I wrote to let the world know about Papaji.
Oh, wow. And so you helped publish. So you published it, basically. You wrote it and published it.
Right.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. What a gift. Well, you know, Paul's also here with us, Eli, and he spent some time with you, and he's also so. I just want to welcome him into the conversation.
I appreciate it, Adam. Yeah, I want to acknowledge you too. Hi, Eli. It's fun. You know, I've been to so many of your satsangs, but I'm kind of the quiet one who sits in back. I actually.
Oh, that's you.
That's the best student, the quietest student.
Well, actually, one time in New York, I came up to you after class and I asked you some ridiculous question, and you actually said to me, "Hey, you know, you're close. So just relax." And I loved it. It was really what I needed at that moment. It was a kind of a validation, because what you speak about is rare. It's a rare thing. Although it's when you hear it, it's so obvious.
Yeah.
That's how it occurs to me. It's like, oh, I knew that.
Yeah.
But that's what Adam and I, endeavor to do, is to be good spokespeople for the self.
Right.
For the central self. And so I just wanted to acknowledge you, because you've been a big inspiration that way for me.
Thank you. I'm really glad to serve.
When you talked about Papaji, you know, living in the world awake, you know, that really reflects the purpose of Awaken Life Talk Radio. I mean, our mission really is to empower people to both wake up to this ground of being, this truth, this silence, their true nature, but then also to live in the world and to show up as the fullness of that, which certainly, Papaji did for you, and certainly you're also doing so many for so many now, like including Paul.
That's a natural consequence of being. It's not like it's an and or there's something extra added. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like if you stay fully committed to yourself, if you stay deeply, forever surrendered in to this infinite unknown. So every realization becomes old, every insight is past, and you're fresh into the unknown. The more deeply you are, the more silent you are, and the more effortlessly the life reflects it, and it shows up in the life without any need to do it, without any effort or any struggle or any manifestation needed.
Right.
No creation needed.
It's like the emanation. It's just the pure emanation of the self.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Well, one piece about that I learned from you is any action to actually do it or achieve it or whatever is a movement away from it, because it reflects a kind of fear of it at some level.
Mm.
It's almost like gives you something to do to put it off, as it were, by chasing it around.
Well, mind trying to stay in control.
Yeah. And that's another thing that I really like about how you express the empty nature of thought. Because when I met you, my mind was spinning with all of the spiritual thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And I was trying to, I somehow got in my head that I could somehow live without thinking. And that was some kind of way to do it. Because the thinking was egoic and it was creating all the problems. If I could just stop thinking and go through my life, that did not work out so well. So what you shared was, just appreciate those thoughts are empty in themselves and let those thoughts keep going. And then you keep your attention on what you know is true.
Yes. And the thoughts are just passing traffic, just noise, just like a subway going by or nothing to do with you personally.
Yeah, it's easy to talk yourself into the thought that, you know, that they're real and that they have a hold on you.
Right.
You know, and that, and so that's where the real freedom comes in, is being able to see through the whole thing.
Yes.
You know, that. I've been thinking about just that what really is waking up is the mind itself, because our bodies are pretty awake and, you know, our causal body's awake. So it's really the mind that needs to be freed up from all this stuff. And I guess what I would ask is, you know, there's just people are bombarded with images and all these ideas, and they have a hard time living what they already have kind of waken to. So I wonder if you could chat a little about how do you live this?
You live it by surrendering, by giving up any idea that you are living it. When you are gone, living is gone, and it is gone. Beautifully, life appears. But as soon as there's someone who wants to do it, or who wants to live it, or wants to show up, who wants anything at all different from the way it is in this moment, that's the only obscuration to this moment. So that surrenders. That idea of yourself disappears. And then even if it appears, it has no weight. Just like thoughts, they can appear and not disappear, but they have no weight. And so if your opinions have no weight, if your idea of what should happen has no weight, you're free. And you can relax. And then you naturally show up in ways that will blow your mind. I just had a report this came from Australia a couple weeks ago, and we just had a phone conference with the people from Australia. One of the women reported that 2 weeks after the retreat, she's still in retreat, and her life has shown up. The things that she's avoided for years, she suddenly finds herself participating in with no conflict. And simple things, little things. She never wanted to be on Facebook. Suddenly she finds herself on Facebook, and her kids are thrilled that they can meet her there.
Mm-hmm.
And her kids are saying, "Mom, you're so relaxed. You're so open." And our people at work are saying, "You're so chill. What's happened?" And so, in truth, nothing has happened. She's not doing it. She's not showing up. She's just being herself, and it shows up quite beautifully, radiantly. And then life is a mystery. She never expected that from waking up, I will then get onto Facebook. It's like, whoa, suddenly, what a joke. I've been resisting this for years. Now I'm on it. And it's no big deal. And that was just one of many more profound examples of things that were essential in her life that she was avoided, that now effortlessly. It's not because she had a goal that, okay, I will wake up and then this will happen, or okay, things will work out because I'll stop thinking. So you give up the goal itself. And if there's no goal, then there's a relaxation and a stopping. And in the stopping, then quite naturally, life appears, fluoresces beautifully. Unknown way.
Ever new, ever fresh.
That's a big thing that resonated with me. You just used to say, just stop. And, you know, I like that, appeals to me.
Right.
This is Papaji's transmission.
Right.
All you have to do is just stop what you're doing and take a breath, and then you can realize it right in this moment.
Yeah, not even that's way too much.
Even that, right?
Keep quiet. Keep quiet.
Because you stop, and then your breath, and then this moment, and then everything that came after that. All of that is postponement.
Yeah.
Just stop. End of story.
I like that.
See, this is at the beginning when I was introducing Eli. This is that silence, that pure transmission that is it's palpable. I don't care if you're, you know, 1,000 miles away. You can feel it through the airwaves. You can hear it through the, through the ether.
Yes, this is the mystery of transmission. This is Ramana's grace, really. This bliss of silence. Oh my God. Mm. That we can actually receive it through the airwaves, through the phone calls, it's a mystery.
Oh. Well, we are very pleased and very fortunate to be with Eli Jackson Bear today. We're going to go to our first break, and when we come back, we're going to talk more and sink deeper into this truth that you couldn't sink any deeper into even if you tried. So we'll be right back. You're listening to Awaken Life. everyone, Adam here. Did you know that you can download our shows online and listen to them on your phone? Through your smartphone, you can access our entire show archive. And with the lineup of guests that we have scheduled for 2012, you might just want to throw a bookmark on adamseward.com. That way, all of our shows can be right there just a click away. Thanks for listening to Awaken Life.
Are you overwhelmed by your financial situation, behind on your mortgage, buried in credit card debt? You're not alone. Things have changed in this new economy. The new rich are the new smart, and the lawyers at Debt Relief Northwest can help you avoid bankruptcy and get you back on your feet. Don't lose your home or your retirement assets. Call Debt Relief Northwest today for a complimentary phone consultation at 360-876-6425. That's 360-876-6425. Join the new smart and the new rich today.
The Marie Mini Cherry Show, where energy and medicine meets, airs live every Tuesday and Thursday at noon. Marie's first book, Intuitive Self-Healing, is now available for pre-sale at a pre-sale price on Amazon.com, along with her 6-CD lesson program, How to Communicate with Your Spirit Guides. To learn more about Marie and her radio show, visit EnergyIntuitive.com or connect with her on Facebook and Twitter.
Hello, everyone. This is Adam Seward, host of Awaken Life. I'd like to personally invite you to our monthly silent meditation gathering. Space will be held at Unity of Bellevue for those who wish to gather and practice meditative silence. More info can be found at www.adamseward.com. I hope to see you there. Hello, welcome back to Awaken Life. I'm Adam Seward, your host. I'm here with Paul DeFuria, and today we're talking to Eli Jackson Bear, deeply and profoundly awakened being, student of Papa G, part of the profoundly awakened Ramana Maharshi lineage. And Eli, I was telling you over break that you know he has my dream life. He's hosting retreats throughout the year in Maui, Australia, and Europe. And if you want to, and North America, and if you want to find out anything about these retreats and how you can participate, you can go to leela.org. That's leela.org. So before we went to break, Eli, we were sort of sitting in silence.
Yes. And you know, when you mentioned your dream job, that I go to these locations and sometimes with these people, and I'd say, yes, it's a dream job, and it's a beautiful dream, but it wasn't the dream that I had. It wasn't that, oh, I want to be a teacher, and I want to go to Australia, and I want to go to... I never had any of those desires. I didn't desire to ever travel. I never wanted to go to Australia.
Right.
I never wanted to go to Germany. And I'm so lucky that this life unfolds quite naturally, without my having to try to control it.
Yeah.
And that the less I try to control it, the more effortlessly it springs to life. And so, yes, now it looks like a dream. It's like incredible, going around the world. But I remember in 1972, when I started my spiritual search, I left everything behind and went off into a search for the unknown to find my teacher. And I landed in Peru with $50 and stayed for 6 months, and I remember at one point spending my last 3 cents on some oranges and a piece of chocolate, and sitting in the plaza in Cusco eating my orange and my chocolate. That was the last of all of any money I could have. I didn't know where I was going or what I would find, but I was confident in the certainty that I was in service. And that really carried me through. So, and here I am. You know, so I went from that being penniless in Peru to leading workshops in Sydney and Amsterdam. You know, it's a mystery. It's a complete mystery. But if you grab for it, or you try to create it, or you try to co-create it, you know, it's like this book. You know, God is my co-pilot. You know, it's like God's co-pilot. You know, who's steering the plane?
Right. Right. Exactly. And part of why I'm so attracted to what you're doing is because, you know, the beach I've noticed is a great place not to want anything. I mean, of course, everywhere is, you know, but yeah, there's this, some, you know, abiding in the self and transmitting from the self. You know, I don't know if there's a more, I don't know if we're called to more than that, than awakening is that, you know, and that's the dream. I guess that's the dream.
Yeah, being yourself is the end of the dream.
Mm.
That's it.
Yeah.
So when all dreams end, being yourself is what remains. And even the slightest hint of a postponement of a dream about what it should be or will be or what you want it to be or any of that is just a postponement of the bliss of being yourself right now.
Yes. This. This right here, right now, yourself, our self, the self.
That's really beautiful. Yeah, one access point we like to, a touchstone, as it were, is appreciation. That's one word that we really like to go to because, you know, it's so easy to get caught up in wanting the next thing or thinking about the future. And that, I know that's really true for me is to just keep coming back to dropping everything and seeing what's left.
Gratitude is a flavor of love. If you're grateful, there's no desire for anything to be different. If you're grateful, it's a flavor of love. It's a way of giving back to the grace that unveiled this mystery. It's giving back to the heart that shows all of life. And so the more grateful we are for this divine mystery, the more grateful we are for this intelligent, unnameable love, the more we pour ourselves back in, that much more than we are fulfilled. And the more fulfilled we are, the more unmovable we are. And the more unmovable we are, then the desires for change don't even appear. Not even that you ignore them or they're empty or you don't pay them any mind. It's not even in the realm anymore.
It's, you know, for Paul and I mean, both of us really, the direct teaching of silence is something that we really, you know, resonate with and the teachers who have taught that. And it's, you know, you're such a, you teach in a way that just, it makes me just want to shut up because, you know, because I know that that's where the teaching ends. You know, and I'd love to share, you know, maybe someday I will have the opportunity to share time with you in just silence.
We're having this silent retreat on Maui in those 3 weeks.
It's very attractive, very attractive to me.
I wanted to ask you about your time in Ojai. We have some friends here who are with Muktananda there, and they settled down in Ojai, and when Krishnamurti was coming around, and that just sounds like, and they were all the Theosophist movement there,
and
they opened this place called the Solar Winds, which was a bookstore there,
I'm sure I remember that.
I was interested to hear about your time there. That sounded kind of fun.
I used to lead 3-year retreats in Ojai every January, back in the olden days.
Yeah, that's where, like, the Theosophist movement was there for,
beautiful valley.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Adam and I met through the Integral Institute. I don't know if you're familiar with them.
Yeah, sure. What's his name? Ken Wilber.
That's right. You know, he reminds me of that a little bit because, you know, we like to do some, mind mapping. We like to map things, and we like the intellectual side of things.
Correct.
Kind of the Yana Yogi type thing. Yeah, right. Well, it's sort of like my Catholic upbringing. I'm giving it up for Lent, you know. Because it's just too much work.
Yes, yeah. Eli, I just had this, you know, I've watched some, I love talking to you and about your experiences with Papaji. And I imagine that, you know, I was listening to something or I was reading something and I was just talking about the time that you just spent literally at his feet, you know, hugging his leg with your head in his lap. And I just, you know, that image, I've seen it before and I've seen many people, you know, just being in the presence of this person, you know, just absolutely break down. And I just wondered if maybe you could share a little bit about what that experience was like, being in the midst of that.
That was his mail time. we'd have lunch together, and then his grandchildren would cook us lunch and make chapatis and, you know, fresh Indian food. And after lunch, he would go up to his bedroom and sit and read his mail, and I would curl myself around to feed him. One day, he read this letter and says, "Oh, these people are in Varanasi. This couple wants to come visit." I said, "Oh, no, please don't let them. Don't let them."
Whoa,
he laughed and he slapped me. And then, of course, you know, he had them come, and he told them to stay at the place where I was staying so I could show them through the maze of the market to get them to his house. So at that point, I switched from I switched from just being truly as devotee to see to being the one who serves the tea and helps the guests. And, that's so beautiful.
I guess I'm curious if Papaji, if that was similar maybe to what his role was with Ramana at times.
Different. You know, Ramana was laid on his couch, and people would come, Papaji would come and just sit and stare at him and love him, you know.
Yeah. What did he say about his time with him? Did he share anything, you know, specific that you remember about just being with him?
Sure. Yeah. You know, so the last time he was with Ramana, he was sitting there blissfully for days, and then one of the devotees said, "Well, you know, this man is from the Punjab, and he has relatives there." And at that point, India was about to be partitioned from Pakistan, and there were riots that had already broken out, and people were being killed, and millions of people were killed, and during this time, Ramana said to Papaji, "You know, go get your family out, because the Punjab, where Papaji's family was about to stay in Pakistan, even though it was a Muslim majority population there." And Papaji said, "It's only a dream. It's only a dream. It never existed. I'm only here with my beloved. That's all I want to be." And Ramana said, "If it's only a dream, what's the problem of entering it?" And so he sent Papaji off, and Papaji got onto a train going into the Punjab from India into what was going to be Pakistan. And it was one of the last trains in, and he ended up sitting in the Muslim section for some reason. And when the train crossed the border, the train stopped, and the Muslims got out and slaughtered all the Hindus who were on the train. So Papaji made it because he was in the Muslim section. And then when they got to his little town, he was able to rescue his family and get them on the last train out of the Punjab after the border was closed. And they all became refugees, and he had like 15 people to support. And he went to work in Lucknow supporting his extended family. But he never got to see Ramana again.
Wow. Well, apparently he received all that he needed to in the time that he was there.
That's amazing.
And I imagine, too, that he, you know, referred to Ramana within himself, you know, and long after after his death, I would imagine. I don't know.
Seems when I first met Papaji, he was alone in his bedroom, and it was a little tiny house, and I'd been led. He didn't know I was coming, and I just pulled, and I knocked on the door, and this beautiful man answered the door and said, "He's waiting for you. Go on up." And I went up into his bedroom, and he was sitting on his bed in this very small room with enough room for his bed and his chair, and a big picture of Ramana Maharshi on one side, and then a Sri Yantra on the other. And I couldn't believe it, because the Sri Yantra was the logo for my Leela Foundation at that time. And
a sign.
And then he gave me that picture of Ramana that I have over my bed now. And I'm so grateful.
I'm starstruck. I mean, because, you know, to talk to you and for you to have, you know, to be embodying this and to be so closely connected to it, it's just, it's a little, you know, it's like that feeling, you know, it's like of being starstruck a bit. You know?
Well, one thing I appreciated about you, Eli, is that you really related to me in a way that made me, even though I was a student, not feel less than, you know. It was a real acknowledgement just of what we share. I really, that was great for me.
Because, I'm glad.
Yeah. We're looking for a way to bring this, because when I first experienced it in your presence and in the presence of some other great teachers and mentors in my life, I just felt like it opens up such possibilities in your life. That's the thing I'm here to share. But I don't know, my first question is what to do. I know the answer, but yet, that's my first impulse is, I want to share this, and how do I do that in a skillful way? And
by being quiet. See, the thing is, what you want to share is already a byproduct. How this will help you in your life is really what you say you want to share.
Yeah.
Or how this will make a difference in your life. But that in itself is missing the essential. It's still chasing,
right,
making things better.
Yes.
And that's okay. Listen, that's appropriate for people, and I'm just not a good one to be able to help you do that.
Oh, no. What you're saying is great, though, because any sort of argument about the features and benefits of it,
mm-hmm,
is, again, sort of obscuring the silence, actually.
Well, it's the absolute and the relative.
Yeah, yeah.
Ramana Maharshi was an absolute, emanation. And of course, if your realization is deep enough, it's like that, like you said, Eli, it emanates through your doing.
Yes. That's it. That's the point. Then you are the teacher. You are the teaching. There's no difference.
Yes.
Same.
There's no one having to do it.
Right.
That's great.
Well, we're going to go to one more break. Again, we're talking to Eli Jackson Bear here today, and receiving
smiling
an ancient transmission.
Yes,
and
wonderful.
And having a great time. But we'll just leave you for a few minutes, and we'll be right back. Don't go away. You're listening to Awaken Life.
Happiness hit her like a train on a track.
Are you overwhelmed by your financial situation, behind on your mortgage, buried in credit card debt? You're not alone. Things have changed in this new economy. The new rich are the new smart, and the lawyers at Debt Relief Northwest can help you avoid bankruptcy and get you back on your feet. Don't lose your home or your retirement assets. Call Debt Relief Northwest today for a complimentary phone consultation at 360-876-6425. That's 360-876-6425. Join the new smart and the new rich today.
Called the Oprah of radio by her listeners, award-winning host Dr. Pat Basile is blowing the doors off traditional talk radio. Get ready for powerful interviews with leaders in the field of human potential. Dr. Pat's perspective on living life full out has catapulted her show to the top of talk radio. Tune in, and Dr. Pat will help you thrive instead of merely survive. Listen to the Dr. Pat Show Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to noon on AM 1150, KKNW, and visit thedrpatshow.com.
Kidzen Hot Yoga of Bellevue is a brand new hot yoga studio in Bellevue, Washington. Come join a beautiful yoga community and become part of something greater than yourself. Hot yoga has so many tremendous benefits, which include allowing your muscles to stretch deeper than they would at room temperature, while detoxifying your body and working out on a micro and macro level. If you have aches and pains or are just searching for an active and meditative workout, hot yoga is for you. Temperatures range from 98 to 105 degrees, and postures focus on strength, endurance, and balance, while simultaneously working your organs, nervous system, and glands. This is a comprehensive workout, and more importantly, it's an opportunity to go deeper within yourself and heal your mind and body from the inside out. More info at GetZenYoga.com. That's GetZenYoga.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Awaken Life. Again, this is Adam Seward, and you're listening right here on KKNW and AdamSeward.com. So today we're talking to Eli Jackson Bear, spiritual teacher, very highly sought after all over the world, transmitter of silence and profound awakening, self-realization. before we went to break, we were just continuing this discussion of the self, of waking up, and of some of his personal experiences with Papaji, as well as some of Papaji's experiences with Ramana Maharshi. And now that we're back, you know, I was telling you over the break, I want to make sure people know that they can connect with you for retreats and so on to deepen this. And you have an event, like you said, you're leaving, you said Friday for Maui, Eli?
Right.
And is there still room in that retreat, the one coming up?
Yes.
Okay, so it's a little bit late notice, but if you're interested in skipping town and abiding in bliss with Eli, that would you can again find more about that on leela.org.
We do that at the Rinzai Zen Mission in Paia, which is the hippie side of Maui.
Oh, yeah.
Did you ever? Something tells me you did some Zen. Didn't you do? Weren't you for a time doing Zen?
During Zen, yes. So I was in a Zen monastery for a while, and I used to lead groups in a Zen temple in Kyushu, Japan.
Was it Soto or was it Rinzai?
It was Soto.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, that seems appropriate, you know.
Yeah. Go ahead.
The great disillusionment is, though, when you get to Japan, you realize that Zen in Japan is like Methodist in America. You know, it's a religion.
Oh, right.
It's where you go to bury your dead and pray for good luck. And, you know, it's become just a religion like all religions are. It's a place where people go to try to find supernatural forces that will take care of them.
Hmm. Yes.
So diving back into some of your teachings, Eli, I was reading from a quote of yours here. Maybe I can say it and we can flush it out. It's when you realize yourself is completely empty and devoid of all form, this is wisdom. When you realize yourself as the fullness of love overflowing itself without object, this is bliss. And when you're aware of yourself incarnate in the appearance of form, this is Leela.
Yeah.
Very beautifully put.
Oh, thank you. Actually, I was inspired by something Nisargadatta said, and I wanted to take it to its next conclusion. So this was really my answer to a Nisargadatta couplet, which I don't remember the original.
Mm-hmm. But it sounds like the first step is the realization of emptiness,
That's right.
Devoid of form, which, you know, the essentially everything's empty. It's all consciousness. And that's wisdom.
The realization of that, not the knowledge of that.
Yes.
See, what happens in our time with the spiritual subculture that we live in, with the enlightened subculture we live in the idea of that rather than in the realization of it.
Right.
And so yes, it's all empty. Yes, I know I'm empty. I know the world is empty. Empty, empty, empty.
Right.
But that's the mind knowing it. And when the mind knows it, it becomes it's still true, but it becomes a subtle concept as a way of landing. And then in landing, we kind of propagandize it. We then use this concept as if, emptiness and everything, yes. And in that, we overlook the fresh, unspoken beauty that's actually here in this moment. Whenever the mind even comes to dwell again into this totality of fathomless, unknown, unspeakable that we call empty, for want of a better word, it's such an inadequate word.
Right. So it's the key word is really realize. It's not.
Yes, yeah. That's right. That's it. The key word is realize.
Yeah. And you say, and it's similarly, when you realize yourself as the fullness of love, overflowing itself without object, this is bliss. So again, the bliss is the realization.
Yes, that's right.
That's great.
And of course you go on the you know, when you are aware, I guess in this sense, awareness follows realization of yourself incarnate in the appearance of form. This is Leela. And Leela, you know, for those of listeners who don't know, you probably do, but if you don't, Leela is this divine game.
Yes, the play of consciousness.
That we're all in here. The play. I love that word, play. Yeah.
Yes, it is. It's a play of God.
Yeah. We had, last week we had, or was it 2 weeks ago, we had Jumpo Kelly, and he's a Rinzai Zen teacher. And he talks about his process as a sort of ritualized suicide. In other words, you know, it's like the death of this ego. He wants to kind of flush it out and deconstruct it.
Well, it's about it feels like it's about making room for this, to participate in this game as who you really are. You know, like conscious, you know, we talk about consciousness becoming conscious of itself, you know, and some we've talked to about evolutionary enlightenment, which Paul tells me you have a unique take on. And, you know, in a sense, that's the when you come to the end of this quote, it's like the point is, or part of the point is this game that we're, this blissful game that we're all a part, that the self is, you know, continually unfolding as, you know, in and through each of our awakened lives.
Yeah. And that's actually it's the byproduct, not the point, you know?
Thank you.
Yeah. Lila is the byproduct, and quite naturally and blissfully the byproduct. Yeah. But the point is realization.
Right.
And that's so beautiful. That's so clear. Thank you so much. I'm so glad you're articulating it in such a beautiful way.
Well, for me, I mean, just, you know, in the last few years, I mean, you spoke earlier, you know, when we started about this dawning that's happening. And I mean, in the last few years for me, I've just been, you know, immersing. I feel like I've been sitting on a park bench for the last 2 years, and the revelation, of course, or the realization, you know, is, you know, the self, but an aspect of that is this playfulness, I speak from experience, with, you know, I mean, and for me, you know, what I've noticed is that the whole world is evolving. You know, music sounds better. I mean, music's evolving, art is evolving, you know, technology is evolving, and it's just this, you know, unfathomable expression of this one, this silent ground. You know, it's like that we can touch it, we can feel it, and we can know it, you know, experientially, and then it reveals itself in form, you know, and so yeah, I get excited.
Yeah, beautiful. Lucky life, such a lucky life. How old are you?
30.
30, beautiful. So 30 years ago, so go back, what year, what year were you born?
1981.
So I remember 1981 so clearly, and in 1981 this was just beginning. The first Tibetans came over, you know, in the 70s. So, 81, they'd been here a few years. The Zen was really still just on the West Coast and East Coast. And it was just beginning sparks were happening.
Yes.
You know? And so now it's like everything's lit.
Yes.
It's so beautiful. fast.
Even in high school, for me, I mean, my awakening happened in the year 2000. It was the same year I graduated high school. But even at that time, I mean, nobody, you know, I went out into the community and said, hey, I'm awake, you know, because I didn't know what else to do. And, you know, I was swallowed up by the, you know, like a fundamentalist Christian community for a few months. I only lasted about 2 months in there. But, you know, that was what was there in the culture at the time.
Right.
And now if someone, you know, were to say, hey, I've feel like I've woken up.
Yeah.
There's a lot more, you know, even since the year 2000, even just in the last 12 years, it's been remarkable what's happened.
Yeah, it's spreading. Everywhere I go, every country I go to, there's thoughts on it. It's spreading.
I'm wondering how, if you've noticed a difference in the last few years in the satsang that you've been doing. Do you see it? Does it seem different?
It's very different because when Gangaji first started satsang in 1990, when we first met Papaji, it first started out with a testing of who are you, and started out with a testing of, you know, what do you know, and what are you talking about. And there's a lot of fighting that happened in the first few years, and then people got it, and then there was a mass realization, and then there was the reaction formation about that. There were people who have been conceptually awake, and anyway, it's been rolling and unfolding, and now it's like it just came from Australia. People are having such profound, deep realizations right off the boat, and it's amazing. And all over, I mean, East centuries. And just amazing. People are getting deep realization so quickly. No, this is really since Papaji. This is Papaji's grace. Mm-hmm. Because before that, before Papaji, I was teaching for 10 years at least before I met Papaji, and nobody was waking up. Mm-hmm. Nobody was speaking of silence. Nobody was having a quiet mind. Nobody was free. And this is really Papaji's grace. Mm-hmm. It's mind-blowing how it's caught and it's catching and burning. And then it creates its own atmosphere so that others who haven't even contacted it, it's in the air, it's in the airwaves, it's in the frequencies, and then we spontaneously catch it from each other.
Yeah. Well, you, before you went to see him, you did you have a counseling practice?
Before I went to see Papaji, I was teaching therapists, and I had a private practice, and I was leading groups in Vienna and at Big Sur. I was doing month-long retreats at Big Sur twice a year, and in Vienna, and then Hawaii. Mm. And so I was leading groups, teaching therapists, and teaching this model of awakening that I had developed using the Enneagram and the insights from Zen and Tibetan Buddhism and Sufi work with essence. Mm. And how that combined with the Enneagram and hypnosis, clinical hypnosis, Ericksonian hypnosis, to wake up from the trance of suffering. Mm. That's the work I was doing before I met Papaji.
That's great.
Eli, let me ask you: Do you think we're on the brink or on the verge of a planetary awakening at this point?
Yeah, we were just before the dawn.
Just before the dawn. And have you thought much about what? Well, I don't know how much you think, but have you thought much about right? Or maybe had an inspiring vision about what that might look like.
I'm not interested in inspired visions of the future. They're all fantasy, all visions. Give up all your visions, and the truth reveals itself in ways we could never imagine. That's my experience. I could never have imagined this. I could never have imagined our phone call. Mm-hmm. I could never have imagined ever going to Sydney or going to Europe. Or I could never have imagined sitting in satsang. I never could have imagined leaving satsang. I never could have imagined the bliss of satsang. I never could have imagined the bliss of Ramana Maharshi. I never could have imagined it, ever. I came from a very bleak world. And if I lived in my projections and my fantasies and my imaginations, I'd still be stuck somewhere back with all my friends in New York, married with kids and trying to get by or something.
Right. And ultimately, you imagined all of it.
No, ultimately, I didn't imagine any of it.
What about, maybe.
I like that.
Well, yeah, I guess it just depends which eye we're talking about.
Well, I think that's a big thing, because that's a tough one for people to let go of, is their fantasies. But they can be a huge block, because it really is a projection about, it's a future thought that you're having in the present to compare to this present, and then seems lacking. And I'm so inspired about that. You keep pointing back to this moment.
Right, to the self.
Even if there is no comparison, the very act of projecting something that isn't here, as opposed to what already is here, is overlooking the essential.
Yes.
No matter how beautiful the vision of what you may think may be here, or should be here, or will be here, or could be here, it doesn't compare to the moment. Mm. Then you stay true to the moment, and then the moment reveals, as it does.
Right.
Yeah. All our projections do are skip the moment we're already in. We're overlooking it.
Well, Eli, I just really appreciate the consistency with which you point us home.
I'm sorry, it's a conversation killer, man.
No, it's great.
No.
Hey, I love it.
There's a lot of people that you can talk to who will talk about, envisioning sort of the future, life. And I do think that it has, on a relative sense, I think it has value. Yeah. But the teachers that really pour forth from silence and point to silence, I think, are some of the most precious jewels on our planet. And so I really see you that way. And I thank you so much for taking the time today to do exactly that here with us.
Oh, thank you. Well, I was never skilled in small talk. And so I was always socially quite inept because I just didn't get it. You know? What are they chattering about?
Leela.org, everyone. Leela.org. You can, you know, see Eli this weekend, and I highly recommend it. So.
Thanks again, Eli.
Thanks so much.
Such a pleasure to talk to you.
Deep bow.
Yes.
Everybody, you can hear us at adamseward.com next week. Adamseward.com. See you there. Bye.
Higher consciousness perspective. The hosts on Transformation Talk Radio offer a positive and new paradigm shift, a new vision for a collective future. They are empowering and helping all of us experience a powerful wave of personal shifts and cultural change as we break through to even greater levels of awareness. Take down our toll-free number, 1-800-930-2819. Call in, connect, make sure you tap into some of the world's most empowering psychics, healers, and more. Get an on-air reading with the best. Tune in, TransformationTalkRadio.com. Hey, everybody, we'll see you there.
Transformation, 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 talk radio. Transformation, 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 talk radio.
Transformation Talk Radio is designed to attract people like you and like me. Millions of people across the globe are looking to uplevel their lives. If you have a message and want to take it out on Transformation Talk Radio, make sure you give us a call, 1-800-930-2819, or send an email to host@transformationtalkradio.com and get ready to host your own show on one of the fastest growing transformative networks in the world. Transformation Talk Radio. Hey everyone, you're listening to Transformation Talk Radio. Don't touch that dial. We'll be beginning a brand new show at the top of the hour with one of our amazing hosts, Transformation Talk Radio. Talk radio to change the world. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio. Our hosts are setting a new standard for a fresh kind of talk radio, creating conversations that are transforming the world, one listener at a time. Transformation Talk Radio's mission is to broadcast a distinct blend of live talk radio interviews with a mix of uplifting and intelligent news, educational and practical information. Topics range from personal development to critical issues relevant to a rapidly changing world. Stay tuned. Transformation Talk Radio starts at the top of every hour.